is Common Sense Radio. Straightforward and no excuses.
All right. Come on now.
This is the Steve Gruber Show.
Call me crazy.
Oh, yeah.
What I said was perfectly right and spot on accurate.
Boy's got a mouth like a cannon, always shooting it all.
Stop. Yeah, stop. I mean, you're way off script.
Got it in me. Gonna quit until it all comes out.
Hey, boy.
Yeah, you know, it's not cynical, it's common sense.
Pay attention to me when I'm talking to you.
I'm gonna rock the nation.
Genuine, accountable, and raw. Here is Steve Gruber.
Well, people like to vote for a winner now, don't they? That's something we've come to learn over the course of American history. People like to vote for winners when they start to smell somebody getting momentum and start to feel that somebody is taking the lead. Well, they tend to attract even more voters. Right now, in the latest poll, Donald Trump has more than twice the support of his nearest Republican rival, that being Senator Ted Cruz of Texas. That in the latest CNN poll just released. Trump picking up 41% of Republicans. It's a new high in the poll. Ted Cruz just 19%. All other candidates are in single digits. Marco Rubio, for the record, at 8 points, if you were wondering. Race tighter in polls in the early voting states, which can generally be a better predictor of votes. Trump and Cruz are neck and neck in Iowa, which, of course, is heading to do their caucusing on Monday. Trump's lead in New Hampshire, where voting is scheduled for February the 9th, is more comparable to his support in the latest national polling, where he holds a 20-point lead, give or take. Among Tea Party supporters surveyed in the new poll, 37% back Trump, 34% back Cruz. So those of you that pontificate about Donald Trump not being conservative enough, well, 37% of those that self-identify as Tea Partiers or Tea Party members, very conservative people, say Donald Trump is the guy they're going with. Still to come this hour, and we'll get to back to a little bit more of this, but still to come this hour, Judicial Watch can be joining us. Apparently, when you talk about conservative ideas and so forth, Obamacare has been in the crosshairs of Republicans for some time. And as a result, Judicial Watch has been digging around, as they do. And their Freedom of Information request has revealed serious security concerns. Concerns at healthcare.gov. Concerns that apparently those that launched the website that crashed and flailed and bounced around, they did not have the required authorization to operate, and they did it anyway. Meanwhile, the Clinton email scandal worsens. We'll talk to Judicial Watch about that. And are you prepared for financial shock if it comes your way? Plus, we'll have the Mad Dog here. Dave the Mad Dog DeMarco is going to join us a little bit later just to talk about the Super Bowl and, you know, National Signing Day coming up for U of M and Michigan State, all still ahead today. All right. Now, this Trump phenomenon, like I said, people like to vote for a winner. They really do. And when they feel that they can get on a winning team, that's what they do. You know, fair weather friends and fair weather fans. It's no different in politics than it is in sports. You know, if the Lions were on a cruise to the Super Bowl, they'd have all sorts of fans around the country that didn't exist previously. 6 in 10 Republicans say they believe that Donald Trump is going to be the nominee. 64%. That's up 25 points, by the way, since November. 25-point jump in those that believe that Donald Trump is going to get the GOP nomination, according to another new poll. 64% of those surveyed by the ABC News Washington Post poll released today say that Donald Trump is the likeliest to be the GOP nominee. And again, that's up 25 points. Just 12% say they believe Ted Cruz will pull it off. 5% say it could be Marco Rubio. So you have to ask yourself, has Donald Trump played this perfectly? Has he played the political game perfectly? And I bring that to your attention because I know there's people out there that say, well, you know, Donald Trump, he's too rich, and therefore he must have cheated. And I know that Ivy has been having some conversations with folks who said some of those things. I said, you know, he's this rich guy who has gold in his Learjet and so forth.
He's got gold-plated handles in his plane, and that's wrong.
And so why would somebody consider that wrong?
I'm not really certain, actually. I mean, if I had billions of dollars, if I decided to put gold plates or gold handles on my items in my airplane, I mean, who cares?
I mean, isn't America the place where you can dream big and be big and you know, and yeah, it's over the top, it's pretentious. However, if you earned it, do with it as you please, can't you?
Well, absolutely, but there's always this kind of idea around really successful people that they didn't get there because
fairly.
They worked hard and they
cheated.
Didn't get there fairly.
Yeah.
They must have done something wrong. There's no possible way they would have that much money by being honest.
Yeah, see, there's this whole notion that you've screwed everybody on the way through. Now,
did he possibly leverage his power and money for his own benefit? Absolutely. Wouldn't we all do that in the same circumstance?
Everybody leverages, most people that are successful leverage the things that they have to become successful. It might be youth. It might be good looks. It might be inheritance. It might be a work ethic. It might be pure luck.
Mm-hmm.
But people leverage what they have to get farther ahead. It's kind of the way it works.
Absolutely. And it's a little baffling to me how people say this all the time. I mean, hear it day in and day out. And a lot of my family members, too. You know, well, they just, you know, they have so much money. You know, they had to have done something wrong. And
these aren't raging Democrats, by the way.
No.
These are people that are kind of, I'd say, down the middle people.
Mm-hmm.
Who still, well, you know, because they hear those things. Well, he must have cheated. He must have done this or that, you know, and he went bankrupt. He didn't go bankrupt. A couple of businesses, four businesses he had apparently, filed for bankruptcy. That's what the laws are there for. You're going to fault the guy for using the laws that are available to him because he's smart enough to use the laws that are available to him? How can that be a fault?
Well, and just because a business fails and goes bankrupt doesn't mean that he's a bad person or that, you know, he did something wrong in some way. But again, there have been many presidents in the past, for instance, that have failed many times over and over
and
over.
In a variety of things. Yeah, in a variety of things.
Let's see, Lincoln.
Yeah, he failed time and time again. So yeah, that's a fair point. Anyhow, there's this notion out there. There is this notion that if you're successful in America these days, that somehow you cheated. Because success in America has become something to demonize, to make villains from. And I think that's unfortunate.
Absolutely, it is. It kind of squashes your desire to really work hard, because then if you become a billionaire, then all of a sudden,
you're the bad guy.
Yeah.
You go to college, be all you can be, follow the American dream. But like I said before, don't dream too big, because if you do, then you're guilty of something. That's nonsense. When we come back, it's Judicial Watch here on the program. Stick tight, it's the Steve Gruber Show.
Delivering Michigan common sense with a big dose of truth and honesty.
Don't get suspicious, then don't be suspicious. Baby, you know you are a friend of mine. And you know
we're all painfully aware of what happened to the Obamacare website, healthcare.gov, when it launched. Battered, bruised, and embarrassment to all. And when it came to security, well, apparently there really wasn't any to speak of. Chris Farrell joining us now, the Director of Research and Investigations for Judicial Watch. Chris, welcome back to the program.
Great to be out with you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. And yourself?
Doing fine.
So, healthcare.gov was, if this is possible, actually worse than we realized.
Yeah, they did not have an authorization to operate, and they were designated as a high risk. So anybody who went onto the website and loaded their information onto the website in order to get a quote for the healthcare coverage, which really wasn't healthcare coverage, it was just an insurance scam, were not just putting their information at risk. They were actually putting themselves in a position where their information was virtually guaranteed to be compromised.
So virtually guaranteed to have somebody come, well, if you're worth more than 50 cents, to come pick you off and you become a victim of identity theft. Is that the sort of thing or something worse?
Even worse. I mean, in this case, you would lose control of things like Social Security and bank accounts and everything else. I mean, it is probably the most vulnerable, the most reckless thing that the government could have done is drive people to a website that they knew was completely unsecured, that even people internal to the government, whether they were HHS officials, people within CMS, the Center for Medicare, and even the government contractors, they were all literally freaking out, sending emails back and forth to each other about how the website was not prepared to go live.
So, all right. So, is there anything that can be done about it at this point? Any recourse? What if somebody had, is there any recourse? If somebody lost their identity or something bad happened. Can they go back and say, "Listen, you did this, and you didn't, and you put me in harm's way"?
I mean, there's always some sort of a claim that can be made, but I think that what this really points to is the lengths to which the administration will go to advance their agenda. I mean, they don't care about the facts, about the vulnerability, about the real impact or consequences for the average citizen. This is all about advancing a political agenda, you know, uber alles, right? So they're going to have this website go live come hell or high water.
All right, so that's one thing we had here. And meanwhile, the ever-changing, fascinating scandal involving Hillary Clinton, you know, I don't remember there being a presidential candidate in my lifetime that was under open FBI investigation because they wouldn't be viable under normal circumstances. But there's nothing normal about the Democratic Party or the liberties they take with the laws of this country, it seems. Now, rumors are that she will be suggested for indictment, but, you know, we don't know what will happen. Tom DeLay is saying very strong evidence that she should be ready to indict Hillary Clinton, but will it happen?
That is the question, and it really falls on the shoulders of FBI Director Comey and the Attorney General, Loretta Lynch. That's going to be the friction point. Now, if one looks at how the IRS scandal was handled, forget about it. Nothing's going to happen. If Comey, who so far, at least in my personal opinion, has shown little or no courage as FBI director, in fact, I would venture to say he's deliberately misled the public. I hold Mr. Comey in very low regard. But if he suddenly grows a spine or a brain and decides he's really going to do the right thing, I would be amazed, frankly. But if he does, then the next hurdle will be Attorney General Loretta Lynch, who is a political operative, you know, who operates at the behest of the president, sort of the Eric Holder school of legal practice. And then, you know, they'd bump heads. If Comey says, "Oh, no, we got to prosecute, if we're going to go after Petraeus, we have to go after her," then Loretta Lynch has to be able to go to the president and say, "We're going to indict your successor," right? I don't know that this is going to happen. And this is an incredibly corrupt administration who has tubed other criminal investigations that should have been conducted. I have very low confidence.
And we're on the line with Chris Farrell from Judicial Watch. Let me ask you this, Chris. Is there another avenue fix this issue? Is there another remedy? If Loretta Lynch says, "No, I'm not going to pursue it," does James Comey have any other recourse?
Other than very publicly and very loudly resigning, and we're talking about a Nixonian-era, you know, Saturday night massacre kind of thing, where the senior leadership of the FBI and other officials within the Department of Justice very publicly resign and then go on all the Sunday shows and say they've lost faith in the administration and that they're corrupt and compromised. Short of that, no.
I'm just trying to figure out, you know, because I think that if what we're hearing is true from Tom DeLay and others and from your organization at Judicial Watch and so forth, the recommendation will be made. There's no other way to go, and the prosecution of David Petraeus laid the groundwork for it. And based on what I'm understanding, Chris, what General Petraeus did was far less egregious.
You're correct. Yeah, I mean, it was bad. It was wrong. It should have and could have been pursued the way that it was. But if you were to try to scale them, right? If one is running a red light and the other one is DUI, wrong way on the interstate, that's kind of the parallel, right? So Petraeus ran a red light, and that's wrong and bad, and he was probably speeding or whatever. Okay, I'll give you that. But the parallel is Hillary is, you know, way over the limit and driving the wrong way on the interstate. That's the parallel of how disparate or how grievous the two different violations of law are.
Hmm. Well, we're going to have to keep an eye on this. And again, we tip our hat to Judicial Watch. Not a very big organization, but you do a tremendous amount of work to keep us all informed of the goings-on out there that would otherwise be hidden behind the curtain. Chris Farrell, thank you so much.
Thank you, sir.
Chris Farrell, Director of Research and Investigations for Judicial Watch. It's the Steve Gruber Show.
Michigan common sense on display every day.
Welcome to the jungle. We got fun and games. We got everything you want. How do we know the name? We are the...
It's Tuesday here on the Steve Gruber Show, and are you prepared? If something goes wildly wrong, I mean, do you have an extra glass of water, something to eat? $5 in your pocket? Do you have something? And if you don't, my question is, why not? But apparently, most American families don't have much set aside. In fact, you know, since Barack Obama became president, incomes have slid the other direction, so making it tougher to save money in case of crisis. Joining me now is Clinton Key, a research officer in Financial Security Mobility Project at the Pew Charitable Trust. And the question is, are you prepared? Clinton, welcome to the program.
Thank you. It's good to be here.
Glad to have you here. So most Americans, I've known this for some, you don't save much money, do we?
That's right. And it's most Americans all over the population. It's households with high incomes, it's households with low incomes, and it's households right in the middle. Households in general aren't saving enough to meet their short-term needs.
So what happens if there's a bump in the road? What happens if there's a problem with the economy? Let's say, you know, Wall Street has a real meltdown like we've seen before, and as a result, people are on the street. Can they, you know, we say paycheck to paycheck, can they even make it that far?
Well, we see that a lot of households, in fact, most households in our nationally representative survey of over 7,000 Americans are living paycheck to paycheck. 55% of the households that we talk to say that in a typical month, they spend the same as or more than what they make. And that leaves households exposed, and households face a lot of challenges today. 60% of the households had a financial shock in the year prior to our survey, and half of those households struggled to make ends meet as a result.
And so if there's any interruption, I guess it would mean that a lot of these folks would just be devastated, be on the street, be homeless, I suppose.
Well, not necessarily homeless, but certainly facing extreme financial difficulty. The typical household's largest shock cost them $2,000. That's half a month of their income, and it's a stiff challenge. Households have a hard time. Among the households who said that they had difficulty making ends meet, half still hadn't recovered by the time we talked to them in the survey, and that for a lot of them, that was more than 6 months after their shock. They still weren't back to normal.
Yeah, so I suppose in this day and age, then, what can we do? We have to think about what we can do to prepare, and what can people do? I mean, I see people, they may be short of cash, but they've always got a brand new cell phone. Most of them have new cars in the driveway. Maybe our priorities are all screwed up.
Well, there are a lot of different paths to financial insecurity. For some households, it's related to their own financial decisions. For some, it's just bad luck. A job loss that they didn't expect, a car accident, a medical expense. So while we don't give financial advice, here at Pew, what we're interested in seeing is ways that families could be supported in achieving their own savings goals. We ask households what they think households like them should have saved, and most people tell us 6 months or more of their income in savings, but 80% of people are falling short of their own recommendation. Clearly, for households, the status quo isn't working when it comes to short-term savings.
No, that's. I think that we're not teaching our kids very well about money and finance and saving and saving for a rainy day. I think we live in a society, unfortunately, where it's everything new and shiny all the time. You know, let's have a new car, let's have a new phone, let's have a new TV, a new game, let's go to the latest movie. It doesn't matter if we're broke. There's more money and people, you know, they make it new all the time. And besides, you know, it's the mentality of the government. The government's broke and they spend anyway. I think that you lead by example, and the example we're giving has led us to this.
One of the things that we see households facing a particular challenge, this is all types of households, this isn't one type of household or another, but everyone, is really understanding the ebbs and flows of their finances. In our data, we interview households at different times of the month. And interestingly, we see that households at the beginning of the month are much more confident about their finances than households at the end. Now, most of us, we get a lot of our income at the beginning of the month and we pay down our bills. We expect those bills. We know that we're going to pay them down, that our account balances are going to be lower. But what we see is people's perception, the way they feel about their finances, gets worse and worse towards the end of the month. And people make decisions based on how they feel as opposed to how they are. And so tools that will help households to better understand the dynamics when they have enough money to save, when maybe they don't have so much and they should dip into their savings, would be incredibly useful for households as they try and manage the complex financial challenges that they face.
We're on the line this day with Clinton Key, Research Officer at Financial Security and Mobility Project at the Pew Charitable Trust. And I think that too many people make that exact decision process that you just described. They feel however they feel, but they don't make decisions based on actual numbers. And numbers are, well, numbers don't have feelings.
That's right. And one of the challenges that households face is volatility in their income and expenses. They think that things are going to go one way and they go the other. 26% of households that we talk to say that their income goes up and down from month to month, and 45% of households tell us their expenses go up and down significantly from month to month. And it's some of it's the things we expect. Car insurance payment comes due, your car needs a new set of tires, maybe you have a medical or a health insurance premium, but some of it's stuff out of the blue. And some of it's opportunities, being able to do something valuable that enriches your kids, being able to do something that improves your standard of living, to take advantage of opportunities.
All right. Well, you know, I think that people need to be more aware of their finances, no question. Clinton Key, I greatly appreciate your time here today and look forward to talking to you soon.
Thanks a lot.
All right, Clinton Key, Research Officer, Financial Security and Mobility Project at the Pew Charitable Trust. By the way, looking at the economy, these low gas prices have a tremendous effect. I paid $1.43. I think that's the personal low for me. I paid $1.43 yesterday. I don't know how low it's going to go, but at some point it's not really terribly good. But low gas prices do have an effect on the economy. It helps those that are poor. And that's oftentimes minorities get the most benefit because they're the ones that have the lowest income oftentimes. Everything should become cheaper as a result because everything is shipped by train and by truck in this country. So these cheap gas prices should help us out. And talking about what we were just talking about there, it should be a little bit easier to save some money. I mean, if you're paying $1.45 a gallon for gas instead of $2.45 or $3.45 or $4.10, you should save a little bit of money. Travel, of course, in general should be cheaper. That includes getting on an airplane and flying somewhere. The downside, I suppose, is that the volatility in the Middle East could become worse because if Russia and those countries don't have all the money they want, well, it could get a little more bumpy than it normally would be. All right, well, straight ahead today, we're going to talk football, I suppose, in the Super Bowl. We'll be right back on the Steve Gruber Show.
Keeping you in touch with Michigan and the world. I see
the moon rising. I see It's 45 after on a Tuesday. Thanks for stopping as the Steve Gruber Show. Our next guest is Genevieve Wood, Senior Fellow in Communications and Senior Contributor to the Daily Signal. Our Republican senators are pushing for Attorney General to investigate the EPA over the waters of the USA. This is something, the controlling the mud puddle in my driveway, Genevieve, is this is a massive overreach by the government to a point of absurdity, wouldn't you say?
I mean, look, Steve, all we have to do is look at what's happening in Michigan, where you are, looking at the whole issue of what's happened in Flint with the water there. This is a government problem. Yes, maybe at the local level, maybe at the state level. Frankly, what's happened in Flint has gone all the way up to the federal level. So they aren't able to actually protect the water in a situation like that. And yet, as you rightly point out, they now want to expand their power to basically say what can happen in your backyard or somebody's swimming pool. I mean, basically, if it's water, they want to be able to regulate it.
It's a matter of control. If they can control the water and the food, well, it's a matter. Because let's be honest. The mud puddle in my driveway has no impact on the environment at large. Even if I spill gasoline in it, I'm sorry to say, it'll have little impact at all on the environment at large, unless it's some sort of horrendous catastrophic spill, which it wouldn't be. I have a pond, for example, on my one property. It's about an acre. They have no need to come regulate my pond or how I deal with my pond or, whether I put fish or don't put fish. I mean, at some point, are they going to tell me whether I can take my kid fishing? Is that next?
Well, yeah. I mean, they're going to tell you whether or not your pond is toxic or not. And people may say, oh, come on, Steve, that's way out. They're not doing that. They are doing that. There are currently court cases now where the EPA is going after individual citizens, a guy, one man in particular, who did basically what you said. He wanted to basically develop a stock pond on his land. The EPA came in and said, you can't do that. They're going after him. They've gone after another couple who wanted to build a house in a neighborhood that had a lot of other houses, but there was some water runoff. The EPA claimed that was a wetland. Therefore, they had to stop the building they were doing of their house. And not only did they have to stop it, they had to pay a fine, about $15,000 a day, until they got the problem fixed. Now, of course, that case is still before court. But, I mean, that ruins people.
Yeah, here's the problem with that.
People can't afford $15,000 a day fine.
The problem with that, Genevieve, we're on with Genevieve Wood from the Daily Signal. The problem there is this. The EPA, which, by the way, was created by an executive order, just for those of you keeping score at home, created by an executive order, so it was never voted on in Congress. You have a bunch of government regulators creating rules, penalties for breaking the rules, and enforcement agents all outside of Congress. None of it's constitutional. None of what the EPA does is supported by the United States Constitution, nor should it be recognized. Now, people look at me like I've got three heads when I say that, but truth is truth. You've got a bunch of unregulated bureaucrats that have given themselves the power to enforce rules that they make. It's not for them to make rules and enforce their ideology on the American people. It's not the way it's supposed to work.
You're exactly right. Look, this is, again, where Congress is the body of our government that is supposed to make laws. We have three branches. Congress is the one that is supposed to make the laws. And increasingly what you see is government agencies, the EPA is one of the top violators of it, creating what they call rules, but they actually are laws, because they're rules and laws that others have to live by and are fined for if we don't live by. And you're right, Congress didn't approve any of this. And the EPA itself is already under investigation by the Government Accountability Office, the GAO, for misusing funds to basically run a PR campaign to try to get these rules passed, and basically so that Congress will allow them to do these things. They're not supposed to use taxpayer dollars to run a propaganda campaign to get taxpayers and Congress to do what they want.
But that's exactly what they did. That's exactly what they do. And, and people don't realize, but there are badged agents of the Environmental Protection Agency that have sidearms. So the government agent can show up at your door and say, you're not using your water properly, or we have to come look at your property. You have to let us on your property, which, no, I don't. But, are you going to say that to a government agent with a badge and a gun that's at your door saying, you need to do this?
Right. No, you're absolutely right. And that's why Congress should be checkmating them on this stuff. Now, I will say, Senator Inhofe, Senator Sasse of Nebraska, that's what they're trying to do in this particular measure. This whole Clean Water Act, the part of it that the EPA wants to basically run roughshod with, which is these waterways of the U.S. rule, that's currently been held up by a court. But Congress can't keep relying on the courts to stop these agencies and stop President Obama from overreaching and making laws when the laws don't exist. But that's currently what they've done. So I'm encouraged to see Senator Sasse and Inhofe step up to the plate, but the rest of Congress is going to have to do the same thing. Otherwise, they're going to keep making up the rules as they go. They're going to keep spending money that, frankly, they don't have the right to spend because nobody is stopping them.
It's crazy, isn't it? And because nobody will step up because too many spineless politicians who don't care about, you know, what's going on, or the land grabs that are going on. The federal government doing so many land grabs around the country as well. We're going to take this and call it a national park. We're going to take this and call it a national wildlife preserve or whatever you call it. Land grabs going on all over the place. There's no constitutional support for all the federal land either. But, you know, the Constitution is such a quaint little document. Why should we bother to look at that?
Well, this is why it matters who the president is, because I will be honest, as much as I want Congress to do what they should do, there would be so much whack-a-mole game going on, because this is happening in so many agencies. The president has issued so many orders and rules that, frankly, I think are unconstitutional. I mean, Congress would full time just being trying to take the power back as opposed to actually doing their other job. You have to have a chief executive who understands what a chief executive is supposed to do, understands what the Constitution allows the president to do, and governs as such. You need a president like that. If you continue to have people like President Obama, I think it will make our Constitution a side document that basically we refer to every once in a while in history class, but that our government no longer lives by.
We're pretty close to that right now. Genevieve Wood, always a pleasure from the Daily Signal.
Thank you, sir.
It's Tuesday. We'll be back in a moment on the Steve Gruber Show.